Listeners are warned that the next program is not suitable for Christmas. It's not suitable for people of a nervous disposition.
Boo!
See? It's not suitable for people who are easily frightened. People who scare easily. And other weeds. And it's not suitable for people who don't like filth and smut. If you don't like lots of rude bits and naughty innuendos, then there's Radios 2, 3, and 4. But this is Radio 5. The BBC would like to apologise for that warning. In fact, this is not a terribly smutty programme at all. I mean, we don't say botty or anything. I'd rather cocked up that announcement. I've missed it. But bring up the sink tune again. I'll just get out. Sorry. Oh dear. Living near a large deal. Returning to your sets, the program that brought you severe to gale force headaches in the summer. The program they said could never return. Warn your friends, put out the cat, hide the budgie, and huddle around your life insurance policies because it's time for Radio 5. Norway, land of the midnight sun, land of frozen wastes, cold shoulders, and girls with enormous big...
Shut up!
And it's from Norway that we bring you another edition of The Thigh's the Limit. And welcome to another edition of The Thigh's the Limit, the program where you get a chance to, if you're lucky. Can we have the first contestant, please, who is a man? I see. Well, whilst he's being blindfolded, handcuffed, placed in a soundproof box and dumped outside the studio, can we have the next contestant, please, who is a
Mr. Betty Fripp.
A Mr. Betty Fripp from Doncaster in Norway, isn't that right?
No.
Good. Welcome, Mr. Fripp, to The Thigh's the Limit. The rules are very simple. You are eligible for probation after serving two-thirds of your sentence. Oh, sorry, that's mine. Where are the damn rules? Ah, here we are. You are given a target. In this case, the lovely Maureen, and she's wearing 8 items of clothing. For each question you answer correctly, she will remove 1 item of clothing. The more questions you get right, the more she takes off.
Ooh!
So you need to answer only 8 general knowledge questions to get a glimpse of tonight's star prize. Incidentally, thanks to all of you who wrote in commiserating with last week's contestant, Mrs. Irene Morden, who removed all but the panties from the Minister of Agriculture and Fisheries. Still, let's get on to the lovely Maureen, and you've elected to answer the questions in lingerie order.
Yes.
Good. That leaves the goodies until last, so off we go. Question number 1. Who built the Taj Mahandi?
Abdul Gamir Khan in 1743 as a mausoleum.
No. When did the Peace of Holland happen?
The Peace of Holland was August the 14th, 1672.
No. Who in literature bit off more than he could chew?
Dr. Ali Montgomery in Kipling's The Riders.
No. Tribulanium is a what?
Oh, it is a base metal used in the conversion of alloys, in particular with regard to industrial furnishings.
No. Who invented the Brotherhood of Married Women and when?
The Magus Ron Foster Jenkins in Alabama in 1813.
No. Where would you find a Rapello tint?
You'd find it in the San Paolo Maritime Museum in Bolivia.
No. Magnesium permanganate has 3 major industrial uses. Name them.
As a fuel additive in high-grade petroleum, as a catalyst in zinc production, and as a byproduct in,
What?
Electrolysis.
No. Where is the Kneeling Virgin of Reims?
Oh, easy. In the cloister of the Monastery of St. Antonin's Basilica, Padua, Italy.
No. Well, bad luck there. Very close. You scored none at all. Not a sausage. So you don't even get a chance to look at her body.
Oh.
Never mind. I'll let you look at mine.
Oh.
Meanwhile, here's Van Morrison.
Oh.
door. Find a key in the letterbox. She turned the door, walked into the room, said, "What's going on?" I just got back from down the road. I got a couple of bottles of wine, something to turn you on. What do you think about that?
Marks the 80th anniversary of the birth of Churchill's cat. BBC One will be celebrating this event with a two-hour dramatisation of the cat's life, with Sir Laurence Olivier playing the vet and Arthur Askey as Puss. There's also an exhibition of Churchill's cat litters at the Victoria and Albert Museum, and you can buy a memorial medallion with a picture of Churchill and a little pussycat. You can also see an exhibition of clothing worn by the people who clean the Churchill Hotel. On Tuesday at 10:30, you can see
It's the Churchills again. This 192-part drama series continues with Lulu as Rita McChurchill, the little-known aunt of Fred Churchill, who was to grow up to be not a relation of any of the famous ones. Sport. On Wednesday, Jimmy Hill in Sports Night will be looking at the Churchills in football and wondering why Lady Sarah Churchill never played for England. That's Sports Night with Churchill at 9:25. And on Friday, in Why is the BBC Broke?, the Director General threatens that unless the current licence fees go up by £100, there will be no more Churchill programmes. Just a reminder that Radio 5 will be broadcasting its own tribute to the greatest man ever born, Randy Newman.
Got a wife, got a family, earn my living with my hands. The road is still downtown Birmingham. My daddy was a barber, the most unsightly man. He was born in Tuscaloosa, right here in Birmingham. Birmingham, Birmingham, the greatest city in Alabama. You can travel across this entire land. There ain't no place like Birmingham.
Adventure by Raphael Soutien-Gorge. An exciting cliffhanger for radio in 26 episodes, starring Ivan Tritt as Bulky and delicious Cara McPiebone as Peanuts. The story so far. Last week, intrepid gentleman hero Badger Mumsy Fortescue-Brown was trapped by the evil Professor Molyneux in a subterranean tank 50 feet below the shark-infested waters of the Indian Ocean. Manacled hand and thigh, Badger was lashed by a cobra to an electric chair, timed to switch on when the oxygen ran out in less than 3 minutes. Above his head, a gigantic five-bladed poisoned axe was suspended by a delicate thread approaching a fast-burning candle. Beside him, a German Mauser machine gun trained at his eardrums. At his feet, a 3-megaton bomb with the pin removed. Can he escape in time? Episode 10. No. Oh. Well, our exciting serial seems to have ended a little earlier than expected. About 16 weeks earlier than expected. So, here on 5 is part of an embarrassing silence, first broadcast on Radio 4 when Roy Plumley fell asleep.
Roy! Roy, wake up! Wake up, Roy, for heaven's sake! Roy!
Oh, let's have record number 4. That was Raikuda, and this is a naughty poem.
There once was a vicar from who caught a young girl with a he said, "Do you?" She showed him her and they both had a with a.
That poem was written by the legendary naughty poet of Reigate, a man whose wall poems have been read by gentlemen all over the world and have been appreciated even in the ladies. But what of the poet who scrawled them? Ron Cripp was born in Harpenden and Birmingham and Sunderland in 1921, 22 and 23, one of the longest births on record. There are no previous naughty poets in his family, although he had a naughty granny and his uncle was Sebastian, the rude violinist of Reading. His auntie was a famous guardsman and his second cousin was twice removed by the police. In 1935, when he was 12,
13 and 14, Ron started his career as the naughty poet, writing whenever he could, when people weren't looking. In 1937, with Europe in a turmoil, the naughty poet met Churchill. He alone had seen the writing on the wall and told him to scrub it off before he left. Times were becoming hard for naughty poets. Serious poetry was becoming all the rage. People talked of Keats and Shelley, hardly a laugh in them. Where was the smut, the dirt, the Vickers, the falling knickers? They hardly knew what a limerick was. And yet the public loved them. No one wanted to know about naughty poetry. It was a time for tightening the belts, not dropping the pants. The Second World War ran from 1939 until 1945, and Ron ran from 1939 until about 1942, when they finally caught up with him. He was captured, typically, near Aberystwyth, from the Welsh word meaning Aber, mouth of, and Ristwyth, meaning mouth of the Ristwyth. At his court-martial, he argued that although his head at 18 was eligible for national service, his feet were still only 16, too young to join a regiment. The army offered him the option of being shot or joining up. Ron wisely chose to be shot. So one cold grey morning before a Welsh firing squad, Ron was asked if he had anything to say.
Prisoner, have you anything to say before execution, boyo?
Yes. A Welsh girl from near Pontypridd made up with a... Yes, she did. She took down her... and showed them her... and... with a... for a quid.
The Welsh firing squad collapsed with laughter, and the naughty poet was off. For a while he disappeared, reappearing in South America, playing the lead in a panto in Chile. But then, in 1943, vague rumours started to spread of a naughty poet in Germany.
There was ein Mädchen von Stuttgart, er macht mit die Knöckers und Flugfahrt. Die Mädchen hat Knödels mit Bödels und Bödels und Strödels mit schmächtiger Klugfahrt.
Over Christmas 1944, it was rumoured that he was entertaining German troops in Berlin. Here is a short excerpt from the classic Nazi panto, Mother Goose Step.
I am missing you. Oh, his love, where are you? I am missing you. Oh, his love, where are you?
In 1945, at the end of the war, Ron returned in triumph to his native land. It was revealed that he had been working all along for British unintelligence. He had been part of a troupe of appalling British actors who had been sent to Germany to lower morale. Their record was remarkable. Despite the severe shortage of entertainment during the war, they'd been booed off the stage at Hamburg with Puss in Jack Boots, they'd caused a riot at Potsdam with their version of Sleeping Beauty, and they'd given the Führer apoplexy with their Jewish version of Cinderella.
Don't worry, Cinders. My love, you shall go to the ball already.
What? Was that? That's mein Gott in Himmler. Woman, Heldemann, auch Wartgespektor geflogen.
Their version of the reluctant debutante was directly responsible for the German failure at Stalingrad, and Paris fell to the Allies the day after they did Iolanthe. After the war, the naughty poet returned in triumph to Reigate. In 1957, he won the Nobel Prize for Dirty Literature, and in 61, he was offered the chair of rude poetry at Oxford, but took the table instead. In 1969, he became the Naughty Poet Laureate, the highest accolade dirty poetry has to offer. The naughty poem he wrote to celebrate the event can still not be read on the radio in its entirety.
A queen called Elizabeth II leaned out of a window and beckoned. So they reckoned.
No use I'm calling anymore. I sit and wait in vain. Yeah. I can stop at your door. Can't your way. No bed.
That was Aretha Franklin, and this isn't Radio 1, it's only Radio 5. And on Radio 5, it's recipe time. Hello. This recipe is for old age pensioners. Take your old age pensioner and soak him for 20 minutes in warm water to bring out all the... What? Oh, I see. Sorry. Sorry. This is the recipe for old age pensioners to help them use their beef tokens. Collect the beef tokens from the post office and leave them overnight in some lightly salted water. Draw off the water and put the soggy tokens in a moderately warm oven for 20 minutes. Take your teeth out and you've got a lovely, warm, soggy pulp with the words beef stamped all over it. Next, some old beetles. Take your old beetles and get some really nice, chewy ones. You can get your teeth into. Put the beetles in a bowl.
Ooh, I need your love, babe. Guess you know it's true. Hope you need my love, babe. Just like I need you. Hold me, love me. Hold me, love me. Ain't got nothing but love, babe. 8 days a week. Love you every day, girl. Always on my mind. One thing I can say, girl. Love you.
Close of play on the second day of the test match in Woolloomooloo, in reply to Australia's 9,817 for one declared, England have lost 8 wickets for the score of naught. Here's Nigel Beer.
Well, this was a great day's cricket for England. They refused to be drawn and score runs. Instead, they got their heads down, their heads banged, their elbows banged, one or two of them held their heads, and Spratt even headed the ball, the only rash stroke he offered in a superb innings of naught. Well, there's been a lot of controversy here amongst the English press artists over the very unsporting way in which the Australian batsmen yesterday continually hit the ball to the fence each time it was bowled to them. And it was good to see England this morning refusing to be drawn into copying this rather senseless scoring. Well, there's still 2 wickets left for naught, and I think the England captain, whoever he is, might be thinking of a surprise declaration that would certainly shock the Australians, who'd have to bat again, tire themselves out, and maybe, perhaps not show up for the last day. Anyway, there you are. England have done jolly well against these Australians who don't know the meaning of the word sport. What do you mean, sport? Oh, sorry, Richie. Well, meanwhile, from the long bar here in Australia, it's back to Andy Roberts.
leave the cigarette hanging in my mouth. Someone gave it to me when I was playing in the South. He told me of its contents, said it contained apple seed. I don't rightly know what's in it, but I know it's what I need, because it's homegrown, homegrown, homegrown. Polly pure bread, clear my mental fog. Ever since I met you, I wanna know if it's me or underdog. Just let me know where I stand and I'll travel down the street, singing the song you taught me to everyone I meet, because it's homegrown, homegrown, homegrown. Jersey Turnpike, where is your soul? I ask you for your trees, not your telegraph pole. You tell me a wires fly higher than higher, but I just dig your green leaves, and here's the reason why. You know they're homegrown, homegrown, homegrown. Casey, won't you sing that song, fill my mind with peace. Trace the words along again about how you're gonna be released. Now what in the world is any man worth us living without hope? You can treat me like a dog-faced man and treat me like a dope, but I know I'm homegrown, homegrown, homegrown.
You're listening to Radio 5, time for Wine Club, introduced, as usual, by me. Hello. Well, on Wine Club today, I have, as usual, a hangover. So here's Ronnie Mouse.
Hello. Well, my first wine today is an interesting Welsh wine, Valpolinelli. It's a rather dangerous brew, has a horrid smell, and burns with a light blue flame.
What would you eat with it?
Well, you wouldn't want to eat with it, but you might wash up with it.
What's number two?
It's the number after number one.
No, I meant the number two wine.
Oh, the number two wine is a northern wine, Suave Bolton. And it's the first wine which I've come across which caters specially for a hangover.
Really?
Yes, this'll give you one, no problem.
What's it like?
3 days of agony.
No, I meant the wine.
That is the wine. The hangover lasts a fortnight.
How does it taste?
Disgusting. It's so foul, they recommend you drink it with Alka-Seltzer.
What's next?
A rugby league wine this time. Again from the north. Nui St. Helens. It's not strictly a wine at all. Rather more industrial cleaning fluid. But try it on your guests, and if it doesn't work, try it on your furniture.
What's your final one?
Châteauneuf du Paprika. A very nasty, spicy, horrible wine with pepper. It's fine in the cellar, providing you don't touch it. And it travels extremely well. In fact, the further away from you, the better.
Well, just a reminder that you can get it from most chemists, so do be careful which chemists you go out with. Meanwhile, here's some vintage Rick Nelson.
Why can't it be wrong if we could have left home at a quarter to nine? Would have had fun and plenty of time. We got started just a little bit late. Hope this won't be our last day. Look up, is that the moon we see? Can't be. Looks like the sun to me. It's late. I hate to face you, Daddy, too bad. I know he's gonna be mad. It's late. We gotta get on home. We gotta get home fast, can't speed. We're in a slowdown zone, but baby, look at that clock. Why can't it be wrong if we could have left home at a quarter to nine? Would have had fun and plenty of time. We got started just a little bit late. Hope this won't be our last day. Is that the moon we see? Can't be. Looks like the sun to me. Yeah, it's late. I hate to face you, Dad. Too bad. I know he's gonna be mad. It's late. We gotta get on home. It's late. We've been gone too long.
Twilight, I can hear the humming of a melancholy coon. All the memories that still linger, I thank you, Mr. Moon. And although I've never smiled, winter, summer, autumn too, now here's one tune to remind me why I feel so blue. Cuba's in the moonlight, playing for me all night. Tell me what I want to hear. Am I only dreaming? Am I only scheming? Stars above me shining brightly. Why can't she be sitting here beside me? Cuba's in the moonlight, will bring my loved one home.
Memorial Ball's bathroom, the Miss World Memorial Baths Ballroom, Wigan, where in front of the BBC light audience, we are going to witness the Radio 5 Boxing Day competition.
Cuba's in the moonlight will bring my loved one home.
Thank you, the Bonzo Dog Band. Well, here we are for competition time. And now then, the rules are very simple and very crooked. I shall ask the question once in a moment and once in a swimsuit. If you get the question right, then you can try and get the answer right. If you get the answer right, you must phone it in before the end of the programme. And remember, you'll have to phone it in very, very quickly, as this programme is already recorded. In fact, to stand any chance at all, you'd better phone it in before December the 18th, because they're rather touchy about Radio 5 and like to get it in early so they can cut out the rude bits. Oh, they didn't cut that bit out. I thought they might. Anyway, here's Ronnie with tonight's fabulous prizes.
Well, Keith, tonight's fabulous prizes are... a fortnight for two with an announcer from Radio Scunthorpe. A glittering evening in the BBC canteen with a man who reads the racing results. Plus, tonight's star prize... Gerald Harper!
No, no, just a bottle of champagne.
Oh, sorry.
Right, well, I'm in my swimsuit, so here's the question. Do you like it? No, that wasn't the question, but this is the question. What is the name of this singer?
I could be happy, I could be sad, I could be good, I could be bad. It all depends on you.
All depends on you.
I could be humble, I could be proud, I could be lonesome out in a crowd. It all depends on you. I could make money and spend it, go right on living and rent it. You're to blame, honey, for what I do. Could be beggar, could be king, could be almost any old thing. Sometimes you made me sad, and there were times, dear, you made me feel so glad.
So glad, so glad, so glad.
That's pretty, so glad.
So glad.
You made me sigh for, so glad.
So glad.
You made me sigh for, I didn't want to tell you.
Didn't want to tell you.
Didn't want to do it.
Didn't want to do it.
So glad.
So glad.
Tell you.
Tell you.
Do it.
Do it.
Glad.
Glad.
I need your love, that's true.
Yes, I do. Indeed, I do. You know I do.
Give me, give me, give me what I cry for. You know you've got the brand of kisses that I die for. You know you made me
love you.
Ba 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 boo.
You.
Ba 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 boo. Deadly doodly, deadly doodly, pa 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 pa. Didn't want to do it, didn't want to do it,
didn't want to do it,
but you did.
Yes.
Well, there you are. Bad luck. We've been sitting here all agog in mid-December waiting for your phone calls, but nobody's rung, so let's just... Hello?
I've guessed the singer.
What?
I know who the mystery singer is.
You can't phone in like this. I mean, the show's already been recorded. I mean, I'm not here now. I'm sitting at home in front of a blazing drink. Who is this, anyway?
Mother.
Oh, hello, Mother. I've been meaning to write, only I've been extremely busy for the last 10 years.
Not your mother.
Oh, sorry.
But I am a mother, and I know the heartaches of being a mother. But above all, I know the name of the last singer.
Who?
George Burns.
Damn.
Give me those prizes.
No.
You've got two.
I want them. You must have cheated.
The prizes are mine.
The BBC can't afford it. They can only afford to give away disc jockeys.
I'll take one of those.
Hello. My name is Gerald Harper. Can I help you?
You can help, all right. You can disappear up your own champagne bottle.
I'll take him.
He's not a proper DJ. He doesn't even work for the BBC. Honestly, people who are prepared to settle for second best. Here's Joni Mitchell.
I don't
want to. Driving into town with the dark cloud above you. Turn me on, I'm a radio, I'm a country station, I'm a little bit corny, I'm a wild cloud, waving for you, broadcasting tower, waving for you, and I'm sending out this signal here, hope you can pick it up loud and clear, I know you don't like weak women, you get bored so they're hip to your tricks. It's been dirty for dirty down the line, but you know I come when you whistle and you're loving and kind. If you've got too many doubts, if there's no good reception for me, then tune me out, 'cause honey, who needs the static? It hurts the head and you wind up cracking, and the day goes dismal from Breakfast Barney to the sign of prayer. What a sorry face you get to wear. I'm gonna tell you again now, if you're still listening there, if you're driving into town with the dark cloud above you, darling, the number.
Well, now it's time for the Radio 5 Christmas story. Are you sitting comfortably? Are you touching anyone? Well, never mind, maybe later on. Here is a story called The Unhappy Prince, and I wrote it especially for you, because I needed the money. I hope you like it, because if you don't, it's too late. The money has already been spent. The Unhappy Prince. Once upon a time, a very long, long time ago, before even Tony Blackburn was invented, there lived in a magic land a prince who was everything a prince could be. He was handsome and dead butch, and he could run and fight and shake hands with people, and open fates and shake hands with more people, and open power stations and make Christmas broadcasts wishing everyone a happy Christmas. And he knew how to be polite to witches, and how to avoid difficult questions from Robin Day, and how to drink a lot of whiskey without vomiting. He loved being a prince, because it is an extremely nice job, and you don't have to get a degree or anything, you just have to be born, which is quite easy, really, and doesn't involve you in any extra work. But of all the things in his life, he loved little creatures the most. Toads, water beetles, kippers, he loved them all, but above all, he loved frogs. He loved them so much that he spent all his days kissing princes in the hope that they would turn into handsome frogs. Now, in those days, things weren't quite so laid back, and the ruling classes got very uptight about this cat going around kissing all the princes. Because while life in those times was happy and gay, it wasn't all that gay. So they told the prince, whose name incidentally was Prince, that he must stop this devious practice and start kissing princesses. And the prince, because he was a prince and hadn't worked himself up from the lower classes, did as he was told. But he was an unhappy prince, and his heart still pined for a frog. And though he kissed many princesses and offered a few his hand, which they were too well brought up to accept, each time he kissed them, he wished they would turn into a beautiful frog, so that they could run away together and live in a pond. One day, when he was kissing a rather perky little princess, she suddenly offered to dress up as a frog. The prince was overjoyed and accepted immediately. So off they went to Frog Brothers and bought a beautiful costume in shiny rubberware. The prince was out of his tree with happiness. He'd visit her at all hours, and she'd get dressed up in the frog costume and put on the little flippers, and then he'd kiss her and take some Polaroid snapshots and tell her she was the most beautiful frog in the world. So the prince lived happily ever after it, until one day the rather forward little princess revealed that she wasn't a frog at all. She wasn't even a real princess. She was a reporter from a nasty Sunday newspaper, and she was going to reveal all about him and his unpleasant practices for the benefit and titillation of her readers. The poor prince was heartbroken. He'd lost the only frog in the world he loved. And people pointed at him in the street, shouting, "Frog, frog!" and "Give us a kiss then, froggy!" Because people like a good scandal, especially when it involves the upper classes. So the unhappy prince was forced to leave his land. And carefully withdrawing all his capital via a Swiss bank, he wandered far and wide, occasionally kissing princes, who never turned into frogs, only into angry princes, who kicked him for kissing them because they preferred girls and didn't want to know about necking with exiled frogophiles. One day, the travels of the unhappy prince brought him to the water's edge, where nearby lay the Royal Aircraft Carrier HMS Kilmore. And here, in sorrow and despair, he knelt down by the waterside, thinking to end his unhappy days. And as he leant over to tumble into his watery grave, he saw, gazing back at him, the reflection of a little pale face. "Ah, me," he said sadly, and kissed the lips of the sad reflection, which smiled at him and winked back and turned out to be not a reflection at all, but a frogman who worked in the nearby boat. "I knew someday my prince would come," said the frogman, and they instantly became great pals and buddies, and they both lived happily ever after. And the moral of the story is that morals are no help at all in a story, especially if they're just rather long-winded introductions to Randy Newman songs.
looked like a princess the night we met. With your hair piled up high, I will never forget. I'm drunk right now, baby, but I've got to be. I never could tell you what you mean to me. I loved you the first time I saw you, and I always will love you, Marie. I loved you the first time I saw you, and I always will love you, Marie. The song that the trees sing when the wind blows. Sometimes I'm crazy, but I guess you know. And I'm weak and I'm lame, and I hurt you so. And I don't listen to a word you say. When you're in trouble, away. But I loved you the first time I saw you. And I always will love you, Marie. I loved you the first time I saw you.
Shut up. Don't do it in a silly voice.
It is Christmas.
Doesn't matter. This is serious.
Oh, sorry.
Hello. I'm the controller of Radio 5. My name's Des Bradley, but my friends call me Janet. It's a silly thing. Happened in Egypt. Apparently, one night I was sitting in this mess. Wasn't mine. It was one of the RAFs. And I was absolutely plastered and binking. What? Oh. Sorry. Well, the thing is, the government have apparently said no to the BBC proposal that license fees should be £30 a week. So the BBC have been forced to make the following cuts. During the day, Radio 1 will be joining Radio 2 for a cup of tea and a chat. During the evenings, they'll be together again for a bath and bedtime. 1 and 2 will be known as Radio Half. In the evenings, Radio 4 will be repeating some of the gossip about Radio 3. And if you catch it, you should see a doctor. Incidentally, if you do see a doctor, give him a bit of a wave, as medicine is a lonely life. Anyway, Radio 5, I'm glad to say, will be on all day, every day, from, when does it start? It doesn't. It's been cut. I see. What about me? I've been cut too. Uh-huh. Well, apparently, Radio 5 is being taken off the air right now. Its vast budget is being used to pay for a new waste paper basket for the Radio Times. Well, that's it then, isn't it?
But I know we'll meet again some sunny day.
The end of an era, Vera. The brave new world of adventurous broadcasting on Radio 5 cut down in its prime. I'll just have to become a bloody pirate.
Pirate radio?
No, a proper pirate. There's more money in it. Play the sick tune, Rita.
Yes, sir.
You have been listening to Radio 5, shortly before it was cut. It was written by Eric Idle, who is available from BBC Enterprises for gardening, babysitting and odd jobs. He was assisted by Neil Innes, who is available on a gramophone record. In fact, on several thousand gramophone records, they just can't sell them. So please, if you have any spare cash, buy them.